Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm John Connolly. I'm joined today by my colleagues Fraser Nelson, who's in Westminster, and Stephen Daisley, who's in Scotland. Now, when Boris Johnson was elected as leader of the Conservative Party, I think a lot of his colleagues in Scotland saw that decision with absolute dread and thought they would be wiped out at the next election. 8 weeks on, Boris Johnson is back up in Scotland today. Stephen, do you still think that's a fair assessment?
Well, yes, Boris Johnson is he's up in West Aberdeenshire in Concardon today. He's been photographed wrestling with a bull, which is actually probably one of his more successful photo ops lately. It's true to say that the general prediction among Scottish Tories was that Boris would be a disaster for them and would lead to a wipeout. Now, there's a poll came out this week, YouGov poll for The Times, the Scottish edition of The Times, that showed that he wouldn't be quite a wipeout, but he would be very close to that. This poll put the SNP, or had the SNP winning 51 of Scotland's 59 Westminster seats, and the Tories reduced from 13 to 3. The Tories who would hang on would be, by the looks of it, Andrew Bowie, who is MP for West Aberdeenshire, where Boris is today, David Mundell, the Scottish Secretary that Boris sacked, and also John Lamont in Berwickshire. Now, that is obviously a significant setback, a huge setback for the Scottish Tories from the result that Ruth Davidson managed to achieve in 2017. Taking party from one MP, which they had, you know, soldiered on with for about 20 years, up to 13, and to essentially have almost all of those gains reversed for Scottish Tories who were critics of Boris, which in terms of the members of the Scottish Parliament, that was very much the majority of them. I think they feel somewhat vindicated by polling like this.
And it's, Fraser, it's a real problem for Boris Johnson in that I imagine he'd find it very difficult to form a majority after the next election without those Scottish Tories.
I know, it's one of these things that Scots like me never thought we'd see, where the Tories were only in government in Westminster because of a number of Scottish Tories in Scotland. And to have 13 Scottish MPs feels, to be honest, it's always felt like a bit of a freak, and one that might not be repeated. I suspect, Stephen might know better than me, that one of the factors behind Ruth Davidson's resignation was that the Scottish Tories were already doing pretty badly in the polls. I mean, they had sunk from about 25% to closer to 18% in Scotland. That was before Boris came along. I think since Boris has been there, there's been a slight uptick, but it hasn't exactly been a dive. The dive came when Theresa May gave up on the Brexit plan and everybody gave up on the Tories. Now, it's certainly true that the Tory surge that we've seen in England from about 20% to about 35% has not really been reflected at all in Scotland. But there are a couple of glimmers of hope. Now, when I was, like Stephen, a Scottish political journalist working in Edinburgh, nothing annoyed me more than these expatriate Scots in London giving you their analysis from a 500-mile distance. But I'll give you two thoughts that that occur to me. One is that Scotland isn't quite so anti-Brexit as people think. Nicola Sturgeon was in the Scottish Parliament this week saying that, talking as if the whole of Scotland voted Remain, 2 in 5 Scots voted for Brexit. That's quite a significant number. And also, at the last European Party Euro elections, the Brexit Party came second in Scotland. I mean, sure, quite a distant second from the SNP. But you've got the situation. And my other thought is that the union will also be a factor, because the next general election will have the prospect of Indyref too. The SNP will be gung-ho for this, and they will be proposing to ally with the Labour Party. So Jeremy Corbyn and Nicola Sturgeon, that sort of alliance, would be Labour's route to power. Now, if you're a Scot and you view the idea of another independence referendum with dread, why would you then vote Labour? Surely the Scottish Tories will be the most effective way of stopping that from happening, even if you're anti-Brexit. So I imagine there'll be two factors at play, balancing each other out, whether your Brexit position on Brexit or Remain, and also, if you're Scottish, your position on the Union. And I think one of Ruth Davidson's many accomplishments in Scotland was to position the Tories as being the foremost unionist party. And I wonder whether they will retain that now that Ruth Davidson has gone as leader. And my gut feeling is that they will retain a lot of it. But I'd be interested, Stephen, to know what you think.
Well, first of all, Fraser, you could never annoy me. No matter how hard you try, you could never annoy me. Look, the point about the Leave vote in Scotland is a fair one. Scotland is often cast as this sort of Remainer paradise. In fact, 1 million Scots, 38% of the turnout, voted to leave. They have been, you know, pretty much ignored, certainly by Nicola Sturgeon, even though a big chunk of them are SNP voters in terms of Scottish Parliament elections. There is perhaps scope for the Scottish Tories to pursue a 38% strategy and to try and grab as many of those votes as possible. The problem with that, of course, is that because there are chunks, and it depends which research you look to, but it's often stated as being maybe somewhere between a third, perhaps as high as 40% of, I think it's a 2015 general election voters for the SNP voted to leave. The problem is that a lot of them will also support Scottish independence, wanting both independence from Westminster and independence from Brussels. And the Scottish Tories only offer one form of independence. The SNP only offers the other form of independence. So it's not clear how the votes on that would split. The other problem is that for the Scottish Tories to become a 38% party, it essentially takes them out of the running for broader arguments about the Union. The fact is that Scotland, although there was a million votes for Leave, Scotland overwhelmingly voted Remain. And you know, the polling this week from YouGov was interesting because it showed a pretty familiar split, 49% in favour of independence, 51% against. But the thing that stood out to me was that 57% of Scots who voted Remain now back independence. Now, that is an increase of 10 points on the same position last year. And so while the Tories might be able to hoover up some more Leave votes, there is real potential there for the SNP to take a lot of Remain votes, not just from Labour, maybe from the Lib Dems, but also those kind of liberal, pro-business Scottish Tories who see Brexit as a sort of an attack on, you know, good common sense business and Scots canniness.
And Fraser, do you think we're going to see the next election, the Tories very much focusing on unionism as a sort of an attack message against the SNP? I know in the past we've seen Ed Miliband in the pockets of Alex Salmond in terms of referendum. Do you think that strategy will still be effective?
Oh yeah, I think it's easily the strongest card the Scottish Tories have got to play. I mean, look, in the North East, there is still quite strong support for Brexit, and I think it will work there then. But if you look at the last general election, the pamphlets the Scottish Tories were putting out had Ruth Davidson's face in it, talking about stopping another independence referendum. Now, Ruth Davidson wasn't even standing in that election, and yet this was the message. And by the way, a staggeringly effective message, really. So I still think that's the strongest card that they've got to play. The big question is whether whoever succeeds Ruth Davidson will be able to play it as well. In fact, it's not even clear to me that the Scottish Tories would have another leader in place. It depends when the election is. Boris Johnson wants one in the middle of October. Now, might Ruth Davidson come out of semi-retirement, smiley-like, to fight one last campaign before she slinks off? I don't know. I don't know, Stephen, do you think she can be persuaded?
I think that would be quite a big ask. You know, if you bear in mind everything that she has, you know, gone through, giving up her position, you know, partly, you know, for family reasons, and also there was a dollop of Boris in there as well, to then say to her, oh, actually, could you come back and, you know, do the job on a wee job share for, you know, the next couple of weeks. I'm not sure that that would go down as well. I should say that, you know, we talk about, you know, who could be the next leader. In terms of the current interim leader of the Scottish Tories, Jackson Carlaw, you know, he is seen very much as a safe pair of hands. He is liked across all wings of the party. I mean, a Remainer, but he is liked by Scottish Brexiteers, and he's also has experience. You know, he was interim leader when Ruth was on maternity leave. So, you know, there is someone in place if the Prime Minister calls a snap election or is able to call a snap election. There is someone in place who can lead the Tory forces. I'm sure Ruth Davidson would want to do her bit. She's still an MSP, but I don't see her leading the campaign Boudicca-like against the nationalist hordes.
And Stephen, we've seen a fair few resignations from Tory MPs in England who can't stomach Boris Johnson. Do you think we're likely to see the same for Scottish Tories as well?
I mean, it's a possibility. There are any number of, you know, Scottish Tory MPs and certainly MSPs who are, you know, they are not fans of Boris, you know, and there are some of them who, you know, have been put in very difficult positions. You know, example I would give is Paul Masterton in East Renfrewshire. Now, I should stress, I'm not saying that Paul Masterton is going to defect. I don't have any, you know, inside information on that. But he's a good example of someone from a constituency that voted 74% Remain, who has, you know, really sort of gone all out for the Westminster Party in terms of trying to, you know, get Brexit with a deal, you know, trying to respect the outcome of the referendum, even though he was a Remainer, even though his constituents are very much against it. You know, he really has, you know, arguably gone above and beyond. And, you know, if the reward that he gets is, you know, we leave without a deal, I think, you know, not only would that be sort of quite a slap in the face to him, I think probably, you know, his voters in East Renfrewshire are possibly going to look elsewhere. I think the thing to remember as well is that while Boris is, you know, he is unpopular in Scotland and he does have, you know, any number of MPs who are not keen on him, there is also a sense of trying to retain the house, you know, trying not to let everything burn down. And if, you know, sort of having to temporarily swing behind Boris for, you know, an election while, you know, while on the campaign trail in Scotland saying, well, actually, I disagree with him on this, this and this. I think there are enough Scottish Tories who would be willing to do that. But it's not the optimal scenario that they wanted to be in at this point.
There is the other possibility as well, Fraser, isn't it, that an election is delayed after Brexit has happened. Do you think that would sort of undermine the SNP's case for both for unionism and that once Britain has left?
Well, this is Boris Johnson's great argument, that a no-deal Brexit is actually good for the union, because if it has happened, if Britain is out of the EU, then the nationalists, if they were to get their way, would be asking to take Scots out of the single market of the UK, out of the customs union of the UK. And if Brexit is supposed to be so damaging, then wouldn't separation be even worse to disconnect from the economy to which a far greater proportion of Scottish goods and services are bought and sold from. So that is the theory. And of course, against that, you need to place the political drama of a no-deal Brexit and the SNP saying that this demonstrates, again, as Sturgeon... In fact, we can actually listen to what Nicola Sturgeon was saying in the Scottish Parliament, because I thought she did put this quite well.
I can't help thinking that if the Conservatives had any confidence whatsoever in that message, Ruth Davidson would still be standing right now where Jackson Carlott is. She can't stomach the direction Boris Johnson is taking this country in. Boris Johnson's own brother can't stomach the direction he's taking the country in. The question is, why should the people of Scotland be forced to put up with it? So I relish the prospect of a general election.
Now, this is the battle cry of Nicola Sturgeon, and she seems to be gearing up for an election where she wants to win every seat in Scotland back. And right now, I would not rule it out, although I still don't think it's impossible that the Tories would keep, I don't know, between 6 and 8 of the 13 seats they've got right now. But the funny thing is that yet again, it's not much exaggeration to say that Boris Johnson's future depends on it. Whether he does well or badly in Scotland could decide whether his government survives, whether Brexit happens, and even whether if the union itself survives intact.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, Stephen. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And I'm delighted to say we have an upcoming event on the 17th of September at the Emmanuel Centre in London, where we have Fraser Nelson, James Forsyth, Katie Balls, Matthew Paris and The Telegraph's Tim Stanley asking, can Boris do it? If you'd like tickets, you can find them at spectator.co.uk/Boris.